Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Alban Lowe is the curator of an unusual art exhibition involving more than a dozen artists and as many writers, called Love Tokens and Bad Pennies, which you can explore by walking the streets of London in February 2019. He tells me he's like an absent party host, arranging experiences and artistic interventions in public space for everyone to enjoy, while himself keeping to the shadows. A publisher of chapbooks, illustrator and cartographer, he has a lot of projects on the go, for which walking and walks are integral. Tell us a little bit about Love Tokens and Bad Pennies.
Yes, it's a brilliant little exhibition where we take small sculptures, less than 5 centimetres wide and tall, and put them out on the street somewhere. It's from about 15 or 16 artists, and what we do is then we invite writers to write about them as well, to make up a story about them, and public can find those tokens and find out more about the artist, or take these tokens home, or the people on social media can look at them and read what the writers have written.
Okay, so this sort of the collections of ephemera, but actually it's a bit more than that. They're actual artwork. Do you commission the artists and give them a sort of tight brief to produce?
Well, I give them a very open brief. So I say to them, can you just do something for this exhibition? The title is Love Tokens and Bad Pennies, and it's about falling in love, falling out of love. It could be anything. So I give the artist full responsibility. So whatever they send me, I put out on the street.
And where do you choose to put them?
Well, I choose to put them wherever we like. So I work with another artist, Dean Reddick, and a whole host of other sort of a group. We call ourselves Collect Connect, quite a loose group, but it's about getting out on the street, engaging with the public. Yeah, so getting out of the gallery space a lot, something that people can do for free, they can pick up art for free, they can become art collectors.
So you're happy for people to actually go and take a piece away?
Yeah, definitely, that's what it's all about.
Okay, now does the artist know where you're going to place their artwork?
Not at all, we keep it quite fluid. Last year we did an exhibition called Small World Futures, which were small worlds, and we exhibited all those around London Bridge, and we really wanted to exhibit them there because of the Shard. It's such a big icon. And also London Bridge had a really tough time of it with the terrorist attacks, and we wanted to change the landscape, change the feel of around London Bridge. But for Love Tokens and Bad Pennies, actually I've had toothache last week, so I couldn't go out and put them on the street. I had to put them near my house.
So anyone can now go out, walk through Twickenham,
yep,
and they might encounter these little artworks.
Yep, that's right.
But you've also given them a chance to encounter them by listing them on a website.
They're on a website, they're on our blog, and then they're on Twitter and Facebook and things like that. I think they're just the perfect thing for that format. You get people talking and they can engage with the writers and explore a bit more about what we're doing.
How do the writers get
involved? So I pair them up. So I show the writers an image of the work and then they just have to spin off on that.
Which are you? Are you a writer or an artist?
I'm an artist.
An artist?
More than anything.
And do you try to place these artworks in places that people can only walk to? I mean, that's really... The majority of them are going to be places you can only walk to.
Yes, that's right. So often down paths, beside rivers for this one. Sometimes they're really hidden away so that you'd really have to stumble across them. Other times they're on posts, so dog walkers. So I put one out this morning from Francesca Albini. It's like a heart with a St. Christopher motif on it. And I just hung that right where all the dog walkers are going past. So they'll see that and they'll think, oh, what is that? You know, has someone lost it? Is it a kind of marker? You know, like some places are marked with flowers, or, you know, it just... get people thinking.
The artwork itself doesn't have any label beside it that says text me or Instagram me or...
That's up to the artist. Some artists really feel it's important that their name is beside it, and others just feel like they want to just leave it as an open kind of artwork, so people just stumble across it and make up their own mind, or they make up their own stories in their own heads, you know, about what those objects could be.
And this is running for a whole month?
Yep, it runs throughout February, the Valentine month.
These aren't the only things you've done which have a sort of a link to walking.
They're a bit of a tip of the iceberg, actually. Okay. So we do a lot of maps. So I do a lot of map work. I'm a director in our publishing company, an old publishing company called Sampson Low Limited, that published things like Jules Verne, Lorna Doone, 12 Years a Slave. We published it, Noddy. And we've kind of taken that back into family hands, and we do lots of walking map. Over the last few years, I've been commissioned to do a series of walking maps for the NHS, Elmbridge Council, done some for festivals. They do a lot of walking stuff.
Give us an example of how one of these walking map projects has come together.
Okay, so my recent one was around East London, commissioned by Barts Hospital, Royal London Hospital and Mile End Hospital, and for the Being Human Festival, where we charted medical history of the East End before the NHS, because it was the NHS birthday last year, and it was just really interesting. You know, a lot of these walking projects, including ours, cut across kind of boundaries. They wouldn't necessarily take you where you normally walk. So you cut through historical strata, social strata, and you get an insight into a different world, really.
Bit of a vandal, not quite a street artist, but you're actually adding clutter to the street.
Yes, we are, yes, little. Well,
you're rather happy about that.
The definition of litter isn't about what it is, it's about its size. So actually, litter, if an object smaller than a certain size isn't classed as litter. And so we do a lot of projects like with magnets, magnet art, and things like that.
Give us an example of a magnet art one, because you've shown me a couple, and you know, I think the listener would love to hear about this.
We started off by placing people's artwork on the street. So we'd turn that artwork into a magnet, and we'd put them, say, down the seafront of Brighton. That was our biggest one. That was about 500 work. We made blue plaques out of magnets, which was great, in Cambridge, and got everyday people to send in their ideas about who should get a blue plaque, put them on lampposts, street furniture, you know, benches, all sorts of things. And again, that's temporary, so it's not illegal. If someone didn't like it, they could just take it off, you know, and throw it in the bin.
You know. Did that happen?
Yes, yeah, some of them remain, but most of them get picked up, thrown away, collected. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of people with our art on their fridge. Everyone's got a fridge, haven't they?
It must be the best
art gallery in the world, you know.
I've worked with people who want to get carried away with technology and involve, you know, smartphone apps and GPS. You've done a little bit of that, as I understand, with social media and tweets. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes.
Smart walks.
So we walked across London with huge letters, they're spelling London in 5 mile high letters. I'm not sure why we started it, but we did. I think we just enjoyed walking. There was three of us who enjoyed walking together. We kind of slightly needed a bit of an excuse to a kind of project to get out. And what we did was take tweets from the people in the area. So say we're walking through Greenford, Perry Vale or something. You used to be able to, on Twitter, find out where people had tweeted from. So you could find within a mile radius that someone had tweeted from Perry Vale. We'd take their tweets and we'd contact them and we'd say, we're putting your tweet out as a magnet form, and we'd put it on a lamppost near maybe where they lived or maybe where they worked or maybe where they tweeted. And it was a really interesting time, fairly early days of Twitter, where people were very brave, and they still are quite brave, aren't they, about what they say. But we'd make them think twice maybe, or maybe we'd celebrate what they'd tweeted by putting it out in the street. Something that was in this sort of ether suddenly became real.
So you like the feel of the paper map and the paper poster. And you're a visual artist and graphic illustrator. Many of these things are actually a labour of love. There's not a huge profit margin in what you're doing.
No, there's... I do a lot of work for... I actually do a lot of work with jazz musicians and do a lot of album cover work. I do quite a lot of in public engagement work now for universities around mental health things. So, and I'm, you know, artist in residence at the School of Nursing at Kingston University. So I do a lot of health stuff, actually.
Artist in residence at the School of Nursing?
Yeah.
That sounds like a carry-on film in the making.
Well, I can't. I always enjoy a new challenge and doing different things. And you look for organisations where there's always something coming up, you know, and also interesting people that you meet. Yeah, and well, and I think physically walking, so a lot of the stuff we do is an idea in our heads, and same with you, but it's amazing the accidents that happen when you're out and about, the things you see, the things you learn. I was rubbish at school. I wasn't great. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't do stuff. But I learned so much by getting out and learning and kind of applied learning. So even today, I'll be looking around. I'll be looking at when a house was built. You know, I'll be looking at an interesting person. Think, oh, well, there's the library. Oh, I'll go in there. And I just learn so much better when I'm out and about.
You're not only graphically designing research maps, and obviously your publishing company is publishing them, but your publishing company also publishes what are called chapbooks, are they? And other titles. So tell us where do they come from, and what's a chapbook anyway?
Well, a chapbook's an old British kind of pamphlet, really, and it kind of burst into life at the start of printing presses when they became ubiquitous. And in chapbooks comes from the word trader. So there'd be people trading. So they'd go from village to village, and that's how you got your news. So you'd buy your pots and pans, or you'd buy your whatever you're buying, some cloth from the trader, and you'd say, oh, what have you got to read? And they'd have a whole stack of little books, you know, 16 pages, 32 pages, often quite small, poorly printed on very thin paper, or nursery rhymes or news or whatever, and they would be chapbooks. We found they're brilliant for kind of poetry, small concepts that artists have and they want to share, and people want to read. And I think with internet printing now, which is completely coincided with the kind of birth of internet printing, in terms of you just send something off and a week later you get it back. So yes, it's just absolutely perfect. Yeah, the chat books are just taken off. So we do, I print for lots of different groups and competitions. And
you're not only the sort of artist, you're the producer and distributor. I mean, you know, it's extraordinary to think that 20 years ago you might have had 20 or 30 people doing everything, and putting it all together, and you're putting it together pretty much on the kitchen table.
Front of the TV with my poor wife sits there and while we're watching, you know, films, and I'm folding chapbooks and stapling them. But yes, it's a good DIY. It's a real kind of punk mentality, isn't it?
I say, what's your nugget of walking wisdom?
Things come out on the walk, don't they? That's what's so nice about walking. They just come out as you take the steps.
So. All right. Okay, so one of the things I ask people come on these walks is to recommend a couple of walks. Can you think of a couple of walks you could recommend?
You know, I love that sort of just discovering. So I love directories. So I love things like just buying an old directory and then trying to find the places that either still exist or used to exist. So I'd really recommend that. I'd recommend you did your own. I'd recommend. So the other day I bought a copy of Spotlight, the old actors' book, you know, and it's got all the actors in them where they lived in 1942. And I want to go, start going back and seeing where they lived and putting a kind of, you know, face to a place, you know. And that's just a fun thing. Today I've got a musician to look up just down the road called Jack Clapper, who was a saxophonist, and he lived just nearby. And after I was speaking to you, I'm going to go off and find his house.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Auburn Lowe. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.